Today was meant to be the day the UK left the EU, except hasn't happened. As of now, we still haven't a diddly squat of a notion when we're leaving, if we're leaving, how we're leaving. Joining us now, the commentator Malachy O'Doherty and the Irish News correspondent Alison Morris. Malachy, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Alison, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the day we were supposed to be free, according to the Brexiteers. Doomsday, according to the Remainers. Malachy, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that essentially David Cameron just made an atrocious mistake when he called a referendum. What we've discovered within this process is that leaving the European Union is not really possible. You can get the popular upsurge of feeling behind it within England and Wales. And you can get that demand through a referendum. But you can't actually realise it. It hasn't proven possible to realise it in a way that's acceptable to Parliament. Parliament said it would fulfil the will of the people. It looks at the prospect of a no deal, and it simply says we're not going there. And so that is the end of it. It is either, it's looking now, we go for a no deal, which seems impossible, Or we scrap the whole thing and revoke Article 50. And that also seems impossible because Parliament hasn't the stomach to say we reject the guidance of the referendum. So it's a mess. As far as the local parties are concerned, I mean, they're both looking completely inadequate in the face of a huge constitutional challenge, well, a huge change in the political context in which they operate.
What's inadequate about them?
Well, look at the DUP, for instance. The DUP pushed for this Brexit. Right, so that was a mistake on their part. They are misrepresenting the will of the people of Northern Ireland, who by a majority voted to remain.
They would
in
say
the
it's
European
a UK-wide
Union.
Poll.
Well, that's a constitutional reality. It's not a political reality. The political reality in Northern Ireland is that a majority of people wanted to remain in the European Union. Now, you have to deal with that on some level. You can't just say, oh, there's a clause in this that says this was a UK-wide poll. That's okay. That'll stand up in terms of, constitutional law. It doesn't persuade people that their vote should be discounted and be of no value to them. And as for Sinn Féin, both DUP and Sinn Féin are both ideologically driven, committed parties which can't reach beyond themselves. And they're approaching not just a crisis within Brexit, but a future crisis with a border poll. And each of them has to be able to reach beyond its constituency to either defend the Union or to get a united Ireland. And neither is remotely capable of doing that.
Alison? Is this a failure of politics, the fact that people voted to leave and we haven't left today? This was supposed to be the day.
If you look back at when Article 50 was triggered and everything that's happened since then, I think people would be more surprised if we actually had left today than we aren't leaving today, because it has been such a shambles. It is Brexit's a cautionary tale not to have a poll or a referendum unless you know what you're actually voting for. I still think there will be Brexit, albeit a watered down. And we know that this week we had those indicative votes and they couldn't agree on any of them in all eight. But I think it was Ken Clark's to remain in the customs union was only 8 votes short. And if we could had a time machine that could go forward in 5 years from now, I think Britain would still be in the customs union, and that's how Brexit will be settled. The DUP, I don't think anyone should be surprised at their behaviour. They're unionists and their main priority is the union. Nigel Dodd said this week when they were talking about voting again for the withdrawal agreement that they wouldn't vote for, they wouldn't abstain, and they never abstain on the union. And that's just, that is their policy and always will be. In this case, it has worked, I think, for the detriment of the people who live in Northern Ireland. But, I mean, some unionists, when you speak to them, think that the DUP are playing a blinder by making the whole Brexit process be about them, which is what's happened. So I think that we shouldn't be surprised at that. Westminster's in chaos. I mean, sometimes it's very entertaining to watch, but I mean, it's also very depressing that these people who are elected are completely unable to move this process forward in any meaningful way. I noticed what Malachy was saying yesterday about Sinn Féin, but I mean, I'm one of those people who rolled my eyes at this, idea that Sinn Féin should go into Westminster and take the votes, because they're just not going to do it. It doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter how close the voting is, it doesn't matter whether the 7 votes would make a difference or not make a difference, they're not going to do it. They're elected
and
as abstentionists. They've always been abstentionists, and they're just not going to do it. And at this point in time, I think they're even less likely to do it than they were any time in the future, because in their opinion, the chaos that Brexit's causing is just really means that they've shifted on to a conversation about a border poll, which we would have probably been having in 10 or 20 years from now, but instead we're having now because of Brexit. And so that has given Sinn Féin a focus, which certainly doesn't exist in Westminster, but does exist on this island.
So why have you been so critical of Sinn Féin, Malachy?
Well, I think it's an inadequate response to the political circumstances of the time. I mean, you can be ideological up to a point, you know, but you still have to recognise that politics is the art of the possible. And the art of the possible is that Sinn Féin, and their interest, they declare, is a united Ireland. Right. Well, now, there, you know, in that interest, you know, the Northern Ireland backstop would be a step in the direction of that, potentially. They have no means of achieving that or having any say in it other than by organising a public protest. In other words, you're organising protests because you want to urge other people to cast votes on issues that you have a stake in. Now, that is the behaviour of a political inadequate, and that is what they are. They, you know, you saw another example of it last week in the United States with Mary Lou marching behind this banner, England, get out of Ireland. That's the politics of before the Good Friday Agreement. That's the politics of De Valera, where you define the problem in Ireland as an English invasion. You know, that has been completely superseded by the Good Friday Agreement, where Sinn Féin themselves recognised that there's a veto on the unification of Ireland by a majority within Northern Ireland. And now they go on talking as if that they haven't even made that recognition. So this is immature, inadequate politics. We are in a context which is a huge constitutional shift, which is determining our relationships with each other and with Europe. We are seeing even people like Boris Johnson and Jacob Rees-Mogg being able to shift to some degree, and Theresa May and others, shifting on very, very strong core ideological principles, because that is the only way you get through this. That is the only way anyone gets through this. They are the ones who are saying they simply cannot ever countenance doing that without consideration of what the consequences are afterwards.
Let's take our first call of the day. Michael in Belfast. Morning, Michael.
Morning, Mr. Nolan.
Oh, for goodness sake. Mr. Nolan, are you in the bath?
Talking about you in the bath.
You sound as if you're in the bath.
I'm only out of the shower, but anyway, just organise my parish. You take yourself off the Valletta. It's beautiful.
Yes. Never mind that. Let's talk about Brexit.
Right, Brexit. Brexit is, let me tell you something. Thank God, I don't think we're going to go anywhere. I think we're going to be as is, right? Because if the DUP have... If we look at the DUP's record in the past with dealing with the government, the country, this, that, and the other, you only have to look at the RHI. What a mess. Know what I mean? And can I just say something? That the DUP have no interest, although they said every time, in the Constitution, in the economics, all they are interested in is self-preservation. And just on a point that Alison made, I really do think that the Shinners should take their seats in Westminster, because when you look at it, they're implementing the rule of the British in Northern Ireland or the North of Ireland, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but I think what's interesting is when we open this up to phone callers every day, very few people actually come up with a new solution to this. They blame the politicians for not coming up with one, but is there a new solution? Is there a way of solving this? David and Carrie Duff, you're another person. You're blaming the politicians. But is that not too simplistic, David?
No, it's not. Stephen, as I said, 17 and a half million people voted to leave. 406 constituencies voted to leave and 242 to remain. You know, and 148 of those were Labour to leave, to leave, and 84 to remain. You know, and then you come to the politicians, 160 to leave and 486 to remain. So who's pushing the agenda?
Well, logically, you should fulfil the will of the referendum by leaving without a deal. That is the logic of the referendum. The people...
Why are the politicians...
It's not the logic of the referendum, because the referendum didn't ask people under what circumstances they wanted to leave.
Exactly. It left consideration of circumstances entirely out of it. Cameron said, it's your decision, in or out. The decision was made out. Logically, you go when you go.
Mervyn King.
And I have a solution to it anyway. Why doesn't the Republic vote to leave the EU?
Because they're a sovereign, independent country with rights to conduct their affairs in their own way, in union with the European Union or any other nations they want to be in union with. The Republic has no responsibilities in this. When I say people that the logic of the referendum is leave without a deal if no deal is viable, the reality is that Parliament will not countenance that. Therefore, Parliament has already revoked, in a sense, the spirit of the referendum, and they're right to do it because they don't want to steer the country into chaos and into economic ruin. They're absolutely right to do that. But what that is doing is facing up to the reality that referendum never had any substantial meaning.
You're listening to Malachy O'Doherty at the moment. The Irish news correspondent Alison Morris is with us now. The newsletter's Ben Lawrie. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Do you think this country's ever going to leave the EU anytime soon?
Well, it's the anytime soon I'm not sure about. I think it's going to leave the EU because it's too far down the track and there'll be too much bitterness if it doesn't. But I do think we're probably heading to an extension, and where that ends up, I just don't know.
Mervyn King today on BBC Radio 4, about half an hour ago, I was listening to him. He's the former governor of the Bank of England. And he is saying, Ben, that all of the economic doom and gloom that's being predicted after Brexit has been wildly exaggerated, and that he doesn't think there's been enough debate on what are the benefits or otherwise, of being in this EU club compared to the economics. He said the economics is being wildly exaggerated and this country will do okay.
Well, think for a minute about no deal, which is not just leaving the EU, which is no deal, which is the thing that people most say will be a catastrophe. Graham Gudgeon, who is an economist who's spent a lot of time here, who's Cambridge University. Ashoka Modi, if I'm pronouncing him correctly, who's former IMF in the Republic of Ireland. And Paul Krugman, who's a very respected left-wing American academic, none of them say, they all think that the even no deal is being exaggerated, the problems that will come out from no deal. Now, of course, there are other people, other economists who say it'll be a catastrophe. So we don't know. I think the big problem with no deal, and by the way, what Malachy was saying was right about no deal, except for one thing. There probably isn't going to be no deal because the EU will play ball to get an extension if it comes to an extension. The only problem is this: if everything fails today and it fails and there's no other way forward, and then Theresa May or whoever it is goes to the EU next week and say we need another extension, and the EU says no, there'll be probably enough in the EU who'll say yes because they're really worried about things. But let's say the more hardline voices who are clearly there in the EU say no, then we are into no deal territory. But I think the problem with no deal, even if those economists are right that it won't be as bad as we say, is the psychological trauma that there's going to be. I mean, we're seeing things in meltdown. There's a real problem within unionism now. There's all this, clearly nationalism is furious, and there's all this talk about a border poll. But I think a thing that people aren't talking about is real growing anger within unionism on a range of things. You had a caller not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago, who was an example of this, somebody who was furious, and they were furious about legacy and they were furious about everything, a unionist from West or North Belfast. So the psychological trauma that's going to come from no deal is really alarming.
James and Derry. Morning, James.
Hello, Stephen. Sorry, just a wee quick point. The first 10 minutes of the show, as a member of Sinn Féin, and all my family are members of Sinn Féin, I give them a mandate never to take a seat in Westminster, irrespective of what's going to should have happened today in Brexit. And I understand Malachy looks at Sinn Féin not through the eyes of Alison, who looks through it as an honest politician. Malachy would look through. We rose tinted glasses. The hatred and the vitriolic words that he uses. Yet, Martina Anderson.
What vitriolic words? I didn't hear Malachy using any vitriolic
about the party,
words.
About their attitude to politics.
That's
and their
his
attitude
opinion.
To Brexit. Yes, it's an opinion.
It's hardly hatred, James.
Ask them. In my opinion, it is a downright hatred of a party that is espoused for years. But he doesn't look at it and say, well, hold on, Martin Anderson, who has worked diligently for 3 years, the European Union, the Irish government, have all praised her for the amount of work she's done to highlight the awful, awful situation that's coming along the road. Alison would see how much work that Martina has done.
Alison, I'll come to you in a second. Malachy, do you want to reply to James?
Well, I mean, this is what always happens when I get into arguments with Sinn Féin. They turn to me and they say that I'm biased, I'm full of hatred and bile, as if, you know, disagreeing with Sinn Féin in anything is always an illegitimate position to take.
Disagreeing with everything.
My position on the abstention thing is that it should not even be permissible to abstain. If you enter into an election and you get the vote, you treat a Westminster parliamentary election like an opinion poll. You should have no right to do that, because there are other people in that constituency that you are obliged to represent, and you're denying them that representation if you abstain.
But they have the opportunity to vote. They had the opportunity for 30 years to have an SDLP.
Emma Little Pengilly is my MP in South Belfast. I will never give the DUP a vote. And the DUP know that. There's no point in them even calling to my house. Right, they know that. But still in all, Emma Little Pengilly is my MP in Westminster. And if I have concerns about things that she can influence in Westminster, then I go to her to do that. She has a legal obligation to represent me at Westminster.
But I feel the exact same about Alicia McKellen. She is my representative. She was in Westminster probably as much, or if not more, than Emma Pengilly. When you looked yesterday on the TV, there was one of the most important debates there was six DUP representatives. Emma was not one of them. Emma was not one of them.
This isn't about Emma, is it? This is not about Emma.
What about the person?
I understand that, but don't be saying to me that Sinn Féin do not represent me. They represent me.
I didn't say they don't represent you. Of course
they do not go into the room.
Listen to me carefully, James, because you're getting me wrong again. I'm not saying that Sinn Féin is not representing you. You want them to abstain. I'm saying they're not representing the unionists in Derry who voted in that constituency as well. And that is their feeling.
Because they didn't get the majority vote.
They still have an obligation.
It's called democracy.
You go in
first past the post. It's called first past the post.
I know.
It's democracy.
But you're still missing my point.
Okay.
And it's an important point.
No, I'm not.
Hold on, James.
You're missing my point.
Hold on, James.
I am not missing your point. I've got it.
Okay, Alison Morris?
An MP goes into Parliament to represent a constituency.
Okay, Alison?
I think that what we're looking here, and we've had criticisms of the DUP's behaviour at Westminster and criticism of Sinn Féin for not going in to Westminster, but that's like, you know, criticising fire for behaving like fire and water for behaving like water. We know what the DUP's main priority is. It's the union. We know what Sinn Féin's main priority is, and that's trying to campaign and head for a border poll and a United Ireland, which is not going to happen in Westminster, and for them to go in and prop up a failing Tory government by using their vote, I think at this point in time would be completely against what they're elected to do. If we had another snap general election, Sinn Féin said to their voters, do you want to vote for us to go into Westminster, and they voted for them to go in, well then they should, but at this point in time they're elected not to go in. And that's the entire point of it. And just getting on what something that Malachy said earlier about people changing their minds, and he spoke about Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson, their careers, they didn't change their mind because they were persuaded that something else was better. They've seen that Theresa May has thrown herself on a sword and her job is going to be up for offer soon, and they're trying to make themselves look more electable. If anything, them changing their mind made them less likeable or less trusting politicians, because it shows how easy that they will swing from one thing to the entire opposite if it suits them and it suits their agenda and it suits their future career prospects. And I don't think that's what wouldn't be what I would want in my politician or my elected MP.
Well, I think you're probably right there, Alison, and I can see that point. But I don't think that would extend, for instance, to members of the Scottish Nationalists and the Labour Party, who are also changing their minds. But I accept the point you're making. But the other consideration is, if Sinn Féin are to be ideologically for a United Ireland, and the DUP ideologically for the union, each of them has to extend beyond its own party parameters to achieve that result.
Okay.
If there's going to be a border poll, Sinn Féin need to get the small U unionists to vote for United Ireland, and the DUP need to get the small N nationalists to vote for the union.
Gary and Lurgan next. Morning, Gary.
How you doing, Stephen?
Go ahead, Gary.
Stephen, this is my opinion on this matter in regards to Brexit. Brexit all started off, to be, my opinion anyway, stemming from basically immigration scaremongering. Nigel Farage and his cronies basically saying that we're going to stop immigration, this, that, and the other. Now we've got into it, there's been a vote. At the end of the day, there was a democratic vote on for Britain to leave the EU. Now, coming from a nationalist point of view here, I feel the EP are holding basically the North.
Arlene's saying she's getting inundated with support for their political position on this.
But Arlene, at the end of the day, has said that she wants direct rule, basically. Now, if this gets...
She hasn't
gets
said that. I haven't heard her say that.
Well, was she not on your show, basically, or was it one of the DUP members saying about the Iraq rule? Wouldn't be a bad thing, no?
Arlene hasn't been on this show for a long, long time.
Well, it was one of the DUP members. Well, anyway, sorry, to get you off the beaten track here. Basically, if it gets down to it, what if there is a hard border? Would that, do you not think that would maybe ignite the troubles again?
Do you?
Well, I think something could spark, and it could ignite another 30 years of conflict. That could happen, and that's what not many nationalists feel. That could happen if there is another hard border. Something could ignite, and that could happen. So you can see why many nationalists are scared and feel like there could be a hard border in place here. Now, the DUP, they need a compromise, because they feel they are holding over here, the North and Britain to ransom regards to this backstop. Now, they need to compromise a little bit. That's my opinion. What if my children and my children's children still don't agree with Brexit? Could there not be another referendum years down the line? No?
And yet ultimately, Ben Laurie from the newsletter, the DUP will say, they've said it out loud, they're protecting the union at all costs.
But let me
get Ben Laurie to respond to that, Gary.
Yes, but I think we have to be clear about the fact that the DUP has moved a long way in this. They didn't like the withdrawal agreement at first, then they wanted the backstop gone. Then they wanted a time limit to the backstop, and then we were the first paper, I think, to report when it was Gregory Campbell was talking about a codicil, and then they wanted legally watertight guarantees, and then when it seemed that they were going to be able to support it, Geoffrey Cox didn't give that legally white water guarantee, and it seemed like they even after that maybe were going to support it, and now clearly they seem to have pulled back against it.
Why? My question is, sorry.
Hold on, Gary, let's let Ben finish, and then you can come back, of course.
Just briefly, why were they changing? I don't know. They played their cards close to the chest. There was a period about a week ago or 10 days ago when a number of senior people that I was trying to phone on their phones, I couldn't get them. I think because they're really worried about this. I think that they know that this is an extremely perilous situation that they could be, even from a cynical perspective of what affects them, they could be blamed for no deal. They realise that there are tectonic plates moving that could leave unionism behind. And that's really apparent now in these hardline ERG people who seem to have made a calculation that, well, yeah, we don't like the backstop and this is a problem and constitutional damage to Northern Ireland, but the alternative is that we lose Brexit. And this is the big difficulty for the
DUP. So in other words, in very, very simple language, to those people who you're talking about, Ben, getting Brexit is more important than Northern Ireland's remaining in the UK.
Yes, and the problem for the DUP
that's
is that
scary
if they
for
do
unionists,
the kind of
it?
Thing that they, yeah, if the DUP do the kind of thing that they seem to be doing now, which is go for a soft Brexit, then the Brexiteers think all the more. The people in Northern Ireland can't be trusted to support Brexit, so we're not going to support them.
But
it's
Ben,
a really massively difficult place for the
but
DUP.
But Ben, if we flip that on its head, and if you're right, then why is the DUP's position not the union being more important than Brexit?
Well, they would say that it is, and that is now becoming very apparent. And it probably is the case that Arlene Foster is being inundated with support because the whole country is polarised.
But she's still pushing
and
for Brexit.
Whatever has happened, they have moved. They seem to be on the verge of supporting this deal, and they've moved a long way, and they don't seem to be supporting it now. And there's one other thing that is worth saying. I mean, there's a powerful argument that after the disaster of the backstop from a unionist perspective at the end of 2017, they should have, with hindsight at least, and even at the time, that they should have toppled the government. But could you imagine toppling the government and breaking and ruining relations with the Tories forever? You can understand how they were reluctant to do that.
I think we get it.
That's the kind of dilemma they're facing.
I think we get it.
Well, my question is, sorry, before I go here, my question is there never any other chance, years down the lane, if we are out of Europe, is there never any other chance to have another referendum? Because it might affect us now, but what about our children or our children's children? You know? What about that?
I think we can get an insight as to just how chaotic the whole thing is by listening to Newsnight's political editor, Nicholas Watt, last night. Have a listen to this.
Now, in Cabinet, I am picking up complete and utter despair. I said to one Cabinet minister, why is the Prime Minister holding a vote when she's pretty sure that she's going to lose? And using very strong language, this Cabinet minister said to me, "F*** knows, I'm past caring. It's like the living dead in here."
Oh, God.
We'll pause there. Let's get reaction this morning from the TV, MLA Jim Alistair. Mr. Alistair, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is it Brexiteers like you, hardline Brexiteers like you, Jim, who ultimately are threatening the union, threatening Northern Ireland's place in the union? Because here we have the real possibility of Theresa May's deal being supported today and the backstop being in there and this so-called border down the Irish Sea, according to some unionists, being a reality. And people like you have brought it on. How stupid's that?
No, I don't accept that at all. We're in this position because of the bungling of the British government.
But we're in
it. You can distill this down as to cause to a very simple issue. The people, quite rightly, voted that we would leave. But because we have a Remain Parliament, which is sought from the outset to thwart that, Brexit is being thwarted. And because we have an incredibly pathetic government that never really negotiated with the EU but rolled over at every turn, we have an agreement which is destructive of the union through the backstop.
Okay.
And therefore, anyone who's a unionist could not accept the backstop because it does annex Northern Ireland out of the United Kingdom.
What?
And that's the essence of the union.
What is more important to you, Jim, Brexit or the union?
I want both, but the union is...
No, that's not the question.
Sorry. The union overrides everything. The union that matters more than anything is the union with Great Britain, not the union with Brussels. But I want a union with the United Kingdom, which is an independent, free nation, free from the shackles of Brussels, of which we are a part.
So
that's my ambition.
Okay, but
that's what the people voted for, and that's what the people have been denied through the perfidy of their own parliament and government.
I don't even know what perfidy means, but I'll look it up in a moment or two.
Well, it comes pretty close to treachery.
Now, do you not think, Jim, we are where we are. Have you never contemplated saying to people, do you know what? The union is more important than Brexit, so let's give Brexit away and protect ultimately the union. The reality is, in people like you still pursuing Brexit, you are putting on the table a scenario which weakens the union. Why, as a unionist, are you doing that?
No, the two are not mutually exclusive. The union is about the United Kingdom. And the United Kingdom then has a choice. Do we want to be a free, unshackled country in the world, or do we want to be a vassal state to the EU? The United Kingdom makes that decision as a whole. Where it has gone wrong is that the United Kingdom government, in their folly, have agreed with the trap of the EU that they could go their own way, but the heart of the United Kingdom couldn't, and that is that which threatens the union.
And that is my point.
It is the vassalage
of
the agreement.
But Jim,
that
is my point. I am not suggesting to you a scenario where you could have foreseen what Theresa May has done. But now that you do see it, now that you do see the position we're in, where essentially the Prime Minister is willing for that backstop to be in place, which people like you say threatens the union, why are you not saying we have to give our ambition for Brexit away in order to protect Northern Ireland's place in the UK? Is that not more important to you than Brexit?
No, what we have to do, and what has been done to date, is we have to defeat the backstop. In defeating of the backstop and the withdrawal agreement, then we remove that threat. But you don't surrender Brexit because of a bad deal. you cling all the more to a proper deal and reject the bad deal. And the folly of accepting a bad deal would be to accept the backstop, would be to accept...
But you're gambling, aren't you? You're gambling. If your analysis is right, that that backstop is so dangerous to Northern Ireland's place in the UK in the long term, you're gambling with Northern Ireland's status, aren't you? You've got people like Boris Johnson now supporting that backstop, now supporting Theresa May's deal. So you're gambling our place in the UK. If you're a nationalist, if you want the United Ireland, you might be thinking, good on, Jim Allister, bring it on, Jim. Keep going for Brexit, keep going, because we might just get a United Ireland off the back of it.
Well, I think you've forgotten one very important thing. Northern Ireland's place in the United Kingdom is secured by the will of its people. I don't believe for one moment that the most ardent unionist remainer suddenly becomes a Republican because we leave the EU. So it's a nonsense argument that by supporting Brexit, we weaken the union. The union depends on the will of the people of Northern Ireland, and unionist remainers are not now Republicans, nor will they be.
But you're saying out loud that the Prime Minister's deal weakens the union.
Yes,
weakens our place.
Let me explain why it is.
And without Brexit, this deal wouldn't be on the table.
Yes, but Brexit has been...
So you're gambling with our position in the UK.
No, we are dealing with a government which has behaved appallingly, which has been prepared to surrender the integrity of the United Kingdom through its negotiations, and negotiations that from the start put the cart before the horse. Like the whole issue about the border, the whole issue about the backstop should have come after we knew what the trade deal was. Then you could see what you needed.
But it hasn't.
If anything, but instead we fell into the trap of putting that first and saying we will guarantee there'll never be a border, there'll never be this, there'll never be that, and tied our hands behind our back. The whole thing is folly in terms of the
do you think, Jim, there has been a surge in people applying for Irish passports? Why do you think that's the case?
I think there's an hysteria whipped up by some, which may be persuading some gullible folk. That's a matter for themselves. They're entitled to an Irish passport under the Belfast Agreement. And in fact, they probably hold two passports. But that does not affect the issue of whether or not we remain within the United Kingdom. That remains with the people of Northern Ireland.
The number of people applying for passports last year is double the amount that applied for passports in 2012, Jim. Why would that be? Why would that be? Double. So again, the outcome of Brexiteer unionists like you is that there is double, between those years I just cited, the amount of people applying for Irish passports. You're a recruiting agent for those people who advocate a United Ireland. Are you not?
No, those people who are applying for Irish passports, I think they're clinging to the Queen in their wallet. And that's the real determinant.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, they're very happy to be part of the United Kingdom because of the economic prosperity. They don't want to go into a state where you have to pay to go to see the GP, where you have to pay if you're overnight in hospital, where you have to pay for free school transport here, where you lose your personal tax allowance, where you pay maybe £750 to insure a car. Who in the right mind wants to do that? So the people who are running...
Where you have freedom of movement, where you're part of that trading bloc, where
you're part of that diminishing trading bloc. Let me remind you, the EU27 now only represents 15% of the GDP of the world. The growth is elsewhere, and that's what Brexit's about, following the growth as the fifth biggest economy in the world. If we had a government with the guts, we could stand up for ourselves and see this thing through. But instead, we've had this backpedaling, this weakening, this grovelling to Brussels from the British government. And that's what's brought us to this point.
So what do you think we should do now?
I think today Parliament needs to vote down this deal. If that means on the 12th of April we vote without a deal, so be it.
And your gamble, I go back to your gamble again. Your gamble is that you're part of this gamble, that if Parliament votes for that deal today, then you, by your own admission, have been one of those people who has led, for whatever reason, whoever you blame, to Northern Ireland's place in the UK being jeopardised. If Parliament votes for Theresa May's deal, the backstop is voted for. If the backstop is needed, then there is that so-called border down the Irish Sea, according to unions like you. And you've done it.
No, that's not of my making. That's done by the perfidy of the British government in delivering this deal.
I do wish you'd stop using that word.
I voted for Brexit, not Brexit in name only. That's what's an offer. And that's why this deal needs to be rejected. And I say again, if that means delivering what the people voted for, leaving on the 12th of April, and it should have been today, then so be it, because that is the Democratic...
Leaving on the 12th of April without a deal, despite the fact that you've got people like the CBI, despite the fact that you've got farmers here in Northern Ireland saying, do not do this, despite the fact that you've got leading industry figures saying, do not do this. People, senior economists talking about the potential economic shock to this country, you still want us to leave, no matter what.
And despite the BBC saying that we shouldn't do it. You know, the propaganda from the BBC is unbelievable. And it, of course, has tried to colour the debate. So, yes, the EU-funded CBI, all those bodies that told us it would be the end of the world if we didn't join the euro and were proven so wrong, are telling us again it was the end of the economic world, the United Kingdom, if we left without a deal. And the BBC is helping them on with it. Of course they are, because that's all part of that pro-EU establishment.
Yeah. Everybody's part of a conspiracy except
you. Looks that way as far as the BBC is concerned.
Really?
For sure.
You don't think you get on the Nolan Show enough, do you?
I get on the Nolan Show.
All right. Well, I am part of the BBC.
Yes, you are. But the bias of the BBC in promoting an anti-Brexit stance is there for all to see. Whether it's Newsnight or whatever, it's writ large, night after night.
All right, Jim Allister, thank you very much. Maliki in Belfast. Morning, Maliki.
Hi, Jim, Stephen.
Good morning.
That one makes my blood boil, for you have no idea.
Why?
The troubles here in Northern Ireland, you know, when I was going as a kid, we're fought in the streets of Belfast with a British army and everybody else. And you think, sitting back, the idea is that your own children and grandchildren are beyond that. I have to say this on air. If Jim Allister and his ilk were to rule this country, I'd be back out in the streets fighting again.
Why would you? Is that not a disgusting thing to say?
It is, Stephen, but the man is so one-sided. So anti-Catholic and so anti-Irish.
No, that's unfair. That's totally unfair on Jim Allister. And Jim Allister, if he was still on, would very much deny that. Jim Allister is a unionist. There are some Catholics who would be unionists. So let's not bring a Protestant and Catholic thing into this. He's a staunch unionist. And let's talk about Brexit this morning.
Okay, Brexit, right. Brexit to me, I think, again, from a DUP perspective and a unionist perspective, it's embarrassing listening to... I'm a big fan of Laura Koonsberg from the BBC and Pearson from the ITV, and I listen to...
Laura Koonsberg is brilliant. She's just amazing.
Absolutely, on the money. Fantastic. I absolutely adore the girl. But the backstop is, and what Jim Allister and the unionists don't understand, the backstop was introduced because the land border between Britain and the EU is the Irish border, or the British border in Ireland, whatever way you want to look at it. And that's why it was brought in, to protect jobs, to protect industry, to protect everything. And yet they still persist on saying the backstop has to be tore up. Could someone explain to me, and this is a fundamental question I'd like to put out there to unionism in general, are unionist people in Northern Ireland quite happy to let the economy of Northern Ireland, with my children, my grandchildren, and the economics of this country, go down the pan just to say they're British? Because you've had the lies from Nigel Dodds saying that when he was talking about the backstop and Brexit, that the British Parliament and the ERG are behind us. It's not just us think the backstop is rubbish. The ERG is rubbish.
Well, that's Nigel Dodds' political position rather
but
than
he would
a lie.
That.
That's his
then,
political position.
Yes,
that's his position.
When the ERG
it's not a lie.
Around and said, right, we're quite happy to go with May's deal. All of a sudden, the DUP were sitting on their own wee plot of land thinking, are we the only people that are calling this backstop? They use the backstop as their wee island to fire their rockets at everybody else to say that we're not British. But could someone explain to me, and you heard Jim Allister contradict himself for a very extinguished lawyer. The bottom line is this. Northern Ireland's constitution cannot change without the majority of people voting for it. That guarantees unionism to be in what they call this part of Britain forever and a day. Absolutely guaranteed, and we all signed up that. So could someone explain to me, when you listen to Foster and Dodds and Sammy Wilson waffle on about it's distinguishing the union, it's written in stone, mate, they have got that. So what part of we're not going to be British is in that? Could you explain that to me? But the economics part of it, the country, if you, I spoke to...
Well, now, Malachy, William and Oma totally backs the DUP and what they're doing. Tell Malachy why, William. Good morning.
Hello. Well, I am very congratulatory of the DUP because we have Mrs. Foster and her party. They stood for the union and they stood for Brexit. But the union, as they have shown, is the main item, because if we lose that, then we lose our historic connection, we lose most of our trade, we lose all of those things. So I would like to commend them. And you have a person on there who's castigating Jim Allister and castigating the DUP, and he doesn't realise that they're just acting on the democratically expressed wish of the people. And I want to say something else. I like to keep things simple. We have a government who never really tried to get out of EU in the proper terms, because there's a very simple thing. We in Britain buy quite a lot more from the EU than the EU buys from Britain. Okay. Now, who is going to be the loser if it stops?
All right. Listen, interesting interesting conversation this morning. We've got to leave it there, I'm afraid. Malachy and William, thank you very much indeed.